Hey guys, welcome to this week's Money and Investing Show. If controversy is what you're after, you'll find it here right now today. We're going to look at five stocks and sectors which are very controversial, yet may well be able to provide some exceptional investment opportunities for you. Take plenty of notes, take plenty of action, and it's an interesting moral discussion too. So something to ponder at the back of this. See you in the show. Hey guys, welcome to this week's Money and Investing Show with me, your host, Andrew Baxter, and as always, my offsider and co-host, Mitchell Laurential.
Good to be here, AB. Thank you very much. And glad we've both got our sleeves rolled up coincidentally today, because we're going to take this episode controversial, not in the traditional manner. I want to talk about five controversial stocks or sectors that you can invest in, why you would do it, and when you would do it.
Holy Moses, this is Pandora's box we're opening today.
I know. Hey. Now, if you are potentially socially, ethically, environmentally focused, you may have a distaste towards these. On the other side of the coin, if you aren't necessarily that and you've got to focus on making money, there's actually some really good opportunities in here.
That's true enough. And I mean, we talked a little while ago about the performance of ESG investments typically don't outperform markets. So yeah, if your focus and your lens is outright gain, as opposed to any level of efficacy on there, then I think these five, just ruminating on what wants to share, because there's a couple of controversial ones in there, for sure.
All right, well, let's kick off, shall we? Let's not waste any time. So stock number one or sector number one, what are you thinking?
Look, I'm thinking the defense sector. This is a long tail argument, noting we've got two wars going on within the world at the moment, at least significant wars going on in the world at the moment. Yeah, the defense sectors have done particularly well. My thought process is looking a bit further down the line, and that's with an election coming up in November, and on the back of a return to office of former President Trump, I think economically there's going to be some interesting inroads made, and Trump's previous presidency was one where economic tariffs were used particularly against China, and arguably rightly so, and were somewhat mooted toward Europe on the basis of the NATO arrangement that obviously the US is part of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, which is responsible for Europe's safety from a military perspective. And I think if we were to see a return to the White House of President Trump, I think that we'd see tariffs on Europe in the first instance, particularly as far as cars are concerned, as we go toward protectionism toward the US economy again, but also from a defense perspective. And last time round, President Trump was pretty vocal on his stance that, look, you expect the US to pay for your defense against your neighbor who you're scared of, yet you buy all your energy from them. And started to unpack the lack of contribution on a prorated basis of NATO countries. And I suspect you might see that particular saber rattle happen again, in which case, that's pretty good news for defense industries. You think of companies like Lockheed Martin, General Dynamics, McDonnell Douglas, talking about US-listed stuff, obviously British Aerospace and others around the world too. So, that's a wild card on the back of a Trump win, I think, is one that potentially has some decent upside, even though it's already had a really good run.
Downsides to that, of course, the defense industry, highly controversial. Not too many people can be keen in that area at times.
Well, it's a hard one, isn't it? You can sort of say, look, I don't want to invest in defense because I don't believe it's ethical, and leave yourself vulnerable to being attacked. And I'm not quite sure then what your position would be insofar as, if you've got bombs raining down on your house going, well, maybe I could have been different with my investment strategy to prevent this from happening. But, as I say, this isn't about the ESG lens. It's about just outright where there's the potential for plays in the market. Controversial for sure, but that's the reality of it.
Well, let's dial it up a notch. Let's talk about one that I guess a lot of investors would probably face, and that's the tobacco industry. Mm. So a stock that comes to mind, which we've traded heaps of times, actually to the downside. It's a great stock for shorting, and that's Altria.
Yeah, I think, Altria is, and look, taking a step back for a moment, the tobacco industry very clearly is an industry which is, it's on the wrong side of the ledger, where you have a product which, no question about it, has resulted in deaths of millions and millions of people. And so I can understand the lens in which people would look through and go, I'm not going to be someone that gets behind that and particularly supports it. It's also an industry within itself that can be quite a juxtaposition. If you take British American Tobacco, they owned a life insurance company, for example. It used to be Allied Dunbar and then Threadneedle and various other components of that business. So they sort of had both sides of the ledger kind of covered.
Fully
You've got
hedged.
A product that, potentially can restrict people's quality of life or longevity. And on the other side, you're flogging life insurance to people as well. It's quite an interesting model. And look, I mean, Altria has been at the sort of vanguard of the new industry, which is vaping, but also prior to that, we were having a yak off camera. I couldn't remember what it was called.
Juul. They spent, I think, a large sum of money, a couple of billion on Juul, which failed because the new school vapes kind of took over.
Got it. So, you know, in a way, that can happen with companies where they go down an R&D pathway, you know, on a fairly committed basis to say, this is the next thing that's coming along. You invest heavily in it and it gets usurped with whatever's actually coming next down the line. Good example of that, if you think about sort of VHS got usurped by DVDs, and then DVDs were going to get replaced by Blu-ray, but Blu-ray got trumped by streaming. So no one really cares about Blu-ray anymore because streaming is in play and all those billions of dollars in investment have gone down the gurgler. And in just the same way, that investment has gone for Altria. And look, their share price has been on a fairly reasonable decline. It's actually quite stable at the moment. You mentioned earlier we've traded it to the downside a few times, which is probably the better way of playing that. But it looks reasonably stable at the moment. It looks like it's basing out and is possibly ready for another run. So controversial as it is, you know, these are companies that make, you know, significant free cash flow. So yes, they may get on the wrong R&D path from time to time, but you know, the free cash flow that they spit out the other end is, you know, really quite substantial.
Well, following suit, if we're going to talk about smoking, we may as well talk about gambling as our third option. Industry sector, what about some stocks in that space? Pretty controversial.
Yeah. If we're talking about Australia, we've got Tabcorp and Star, of course, under the spotlight at the moment as to whether they're going to retain their license to operate a casino. And look, I mean, I haven't taken a great deal of interest in it. I'm not a punter. I don't like gambling. I don't spend particularly much time at casinos. And reading the Royal Commission into the conduct of how they've performed over recent years, yeah, the behavior has been blooming awful. You know, it's so outside of the guidelines from a money laundering perspective and other areas of codes of conduct too. And you say to yourself, well, how do they retain a license given the fact that they haven't shown great corporate stewardship? That said, you know, they can be a money press when they're run in the right way. I think casinos, particularly in Australia, have been under a lot of pressure. Number one, from the Royal Commission I just mentioned, and you look at, you know, the likes of Crown and how it's gone through the mincer in Melbourne. Interesting enough, I think it's the largest single employer in Victoria.
Really?
I think it's also one of the highest donators to the local Labor government, the Victoria State government as well, in terms of political contributions. So okay, without being too cynical. But yeah, you wonder how they are in the business that they're in. So the other thing I think that's, you know, potentially impacted negatively is that sort of limit or scale back on China's slowdown of Chinese gambling junkets to Australia as well. And they're two big fundamental things that I think are headwinds for those businesses. And until they show a new board and a clean broom, better corporate conduct, and obviously the de-risking of you may well lose your license, which is a very real probability for both of those companies. Well, yeah, I'd say they're probably more risk on and they don't appeal to me. I told you I'm not a gambler and I feel it's a bit black or red, if I can use that analogy as to whether that's a decent bet or not. And for me, I'd rather keep my cash somewhere else.
So just before we move on to number four, AB, we apply timing, as you said, in the defense space to when things break out or there's something coming up, it can be a good investment. Gambling and smoking are two areas which perform typically quite well, irrespective, they because are, if people with no money, they'll drink and they'll smoke. If they've got plenty of money, they'll also drink and smoke. Can you make good money from these stocks, as controversial as they are?
You can, and I think what you've identified there are what I would call habit businesses. And you rightly say when the economy is booming, people will drink, smoke, gamble. When the economy's not going so well, they do the same. It's a conditioned habit type business. And in just the same way getting a coffee is. I mean, you look at coffee, different type of habit, maybe not quite as damaging for your body, but not necessarily great either. And it's the same thing. It's a habit. You get a coffee in the morning on the way to work or after you've done the school drop-off with the kids or after you've finished your gym session or Pilates or whatever it is that goes on in your world, or after you've had a surf with the guys. That's your habit and it doesn't change depending on how the economy is going. So those kinds of habit type businesses can be quite stable from an investment perspective because they don't get buffeted around in the same way that cyclical stocks or retail stocks do. So they do offer almost a shelter, if you will, from that buffeting of economic conditions. You could add alcohol in there as well. If you're a booze manufacturer or, you know, if you're a vendor of alcohol, you know, Dan Murphy's or BWS and similar, you've got the, you know, with Endeavor Group, for example, you've got the ability to sort of be shielded, if you will, because again, you know, things are going pretty tough. You're still going to have a beer or a glass of wine.
That's right. That's right. Indeed. It's kind of inelastic demand, isn't it? Yeah. So relatively defensive areas in the stock market.
They can be. Yeah. And the IV from an options perspective can be a little bit lower on the back of that too, which is, you know, important if you're someone that's looking to engage in things like cash flow on demand.
Well, let's shift gears. Let's talk about, and speaking of which, shifting gears, let's talk about the environment. I thought that was quite clever. Shifting gears, environment, Tesla is probably what springs to mind.
Mm. Okay.
What are your thoughts?
So, look, I mean, Tesla's had an absolute shocking run. Yeah, share prices effectively halved over the last 10 months or so from, it was about 140, 150 bucks a share right now from, you know, what was it, 290 earlier in the year. And I think the issue that faces Tesla specifically is the fall away in sales. You know, their products are a premium product. And with a US consumer in particular that's felt the brunt of interest rate rises and the pain that goes alongside higher inflation, that ability to pay more for a vehicle than perhaps is the market rate. And the space of electric vehicles has got very cost competitive now with China flooding the market with its own variants and other competition, you know, second, third, fourth mover advantage that are out there. And Tesla's always maintained that sort of premium brand within that sector. And look, you know, in the past I've been quite the vocal supporter of Tesla's business model. It is an incredible business model. And you have a CEO of the business that's smarter than virtually everybody on the planet. He's certainly richer than everybody on the planet. And he's been able to play the game perfectly well to catch a groundswell of movement toward the environment and all of the government subsidies that go alongside that and make an absolute killing on the back of it. But now, given the fact that it's valued as, you know, the biggest car business in the world, they've got to deliver in terms of unit sales. And if you compare its sales versus, say, Toyota, which is, you know, another very, very large volume car seller, they sell a fraction of the cars that Toyota do. Yeah, they're rated as being a bigger business. Now, the other side of that is the environmental play. And we've covered this a couple of times in podcasts.
Where we have.
Is driving an EV, and this may be controversial, I guess this whole podcast is supposed to be fairly controversial, so let's spice it up a
bring
bit.
Bring it on, I say. Come on.
Well, is driving an EV good for the environment?
No, not with Tesla.
So in regards to that, like, why isn't it? And the answer is that pollution is a global issue. It's not a local issue. So if you have an electric vehicle, the lithium that goes into the battery that doesn't have a great shelf life is roasted most likely in China, which is, we've covered this previously, very bad for the environment. It's made of extruded aluminium, which is a huge energy consumer when it comes to the body panels, etc., on the car. And when you charge your car with electricity, because electricity is cleaner than petrol or diesel for the environment, you've got to ask yourself the question, what is being used to create the electricity in the first place? And if that's coal, well, really, you're driving a coal-fired car, which is definitely not good for the environment.
Nope.
So the whole thing, you know, if you wanted to be quite cynical, is an exercise in going, look, I'm good for the environment because I drive an EV, but I'm actually causing mayhem in Africa where the cobalt's being dug out, or in China where the lithium's being manufactured, and down the road at the power station that's coal-powered to charge my car. So I think there is an element of that is also impacting on the sales for that business, but it is primarily cost conscious. Yeah, and I drive a petrol car, and I live down the road from a charging station from a Tesla. It probably couldn't be any more convenient for me to own an EV, but I don't, and I've got no plans on that anytime soon.
Indeed. And I think my dad was actually saying to me yesterday, by 2050, you won't be able to buy a petrol car anymore, EV.
It's interesting. The legislators, the government pushing this agenda very hard. And you'd argue from a political perspective, we're on controversy, so let's roll the sleeves up.
Let's
right
do
on
it.
Yeah, with the Biden administration signing up for, we will eliminate petrol cars by this date, effectively what you're doing is offshoring the vast majority of your car industry to China. And is that something you particularly want to do from a national security perspective, from a trade perspective, from a balance of payments perspective, from a pollution perspective? I don't know if it's that smart, but then there's not much smartness that's come out of the Biden administration in the last 3.5 years anyway. So
indeed,
it's consistently terrible.
That's right.
So, you know, Tesla, I think they've really got to start performing. Now, the other side of the coin is there an opportunity buying Tesla at 140, 150 bucks?
Of course, yeah.
You would be a really foolish person to bet against Elon Musk and his ability to garner a profit from his business.
Indeed.
And I think, you know, at these levels, it's certainly attractive. And even for someone that's a hard-nosed cynic like me, I'm looking at that chart thinking, yeah, when that breakout's on, that's probably good value to pick some of that up and see what the recovery play really looks like. But, you know, we could dedicate more than the podcast to the discussion of the EV business. I heard Lance Stroll, who's the chairman of Aston Martin, kind of say, we've got no plan. We'll continue making petrol cars as long as people want to own them.
Yeah, I'm happy to drive an Aston Martin. That would be okay.
Yeah, I've had a mixed experience. DB12's good. Everything's new. The only thing they've kept from the predecessor is the door handles, which actually the door handles are pretty cool because they kind of pop out.
Very nice. You used to drive one, right? Broke down?
A couple of times. A few speeding tickets.
I'm sure you got good use out of it though, right?
Yeah, it was a great chapter. I enjoyed it.
Well, moving forwards, AB, let's talk about something that is highly controversial in, let's say, the pharmaceutical/drug space. Anyone or anything spring to mind?
Yep, definitely on that. And that is the weight loss space.
I hate this one.
The drug of choice at the moment is something called Ozempic, which has taken Hollywood by storm. Oprah Winfrey, good example of this. I think Oprah owns a portion of Weight Watchers, so it seems a bit of a peculiar thing that you take an appetite suppressant, well, it's actually a diabetes drug.
Okay.
And the idea of treating your diabetes is you eat and drink less, so that it kids your body into saying you're full.
Yeah,
and
right.
So you then stop eating and drinking and then you lose weight. Which,
must be good for you.
Yeah. Must be, mustn't it? And so, yeah, she sort of coughed up that she was taking it and it's just gone ballistic across there. And it's traveling the world at the moment. Interesting enough, it's actually a Scandinavian company, Novo, which are the NVO, I think is the company.
Yeah, NVO, Novo Nordics, yeah. Novo Nordisk, something like that.
They're a Scandinavian company and their share price, we talked about Tesla's share price sort of going from sort of 280 to 140 over the last sort of 10 months or so. Novo's share price in the last 5 years has gone from about $20 a share up into the 500, what was it?
135.
Yeah, it's 500% return.
It's not bad.
On the back of it. And so I guess when you find a product that there's a demand for, and weight loss is one of those products most certainly, especially if there appears to be plenty of anecdotal evidence out there, yeah, that's the wave that things are on right now. So, you know, I don't think it's stopping. Ozempic has only just really started its journey in terms of becoming more widely known thanks to some, I'm not going to say celebrity endorsements, because it's unlikely as a celebrity to come out and go, hey, I used to be a real fat lump, but now I'm skinny because I take Ozempic. I can't see that ad.
Depends really, how much they get paid. People who do anything for
that's
money.
That's true. Yeah, celebrities typically do. That's true. But the name is out there, and I can foresee that the demand for that's only going to go one way. And you're getting knockoff drugs, of course you will, in terms of, you know, non-branded or white label. But for Novo, I think it's likely to be the basis for an incredible growth story for that business. And again, you know, from an efficacy perspective, is it something you'd want to get behind as an investor, or are you looking at how can I cash in on a wave that's most definitely happening and is very much likely to continue happening, because the vanity industry is one that seems to be impervious to whatever's going on in the world.
Indeed. I can use that as an example. Personally, I would have an issue with that, because I believe in health and fitness in the most natural way possible. I also believe in making great money. So that would put me in a tough spot.
We talked about this a little while ago. I can't remember which podcast it was specifically. I think it was when we did the deep dive on ESG. And as an investor, and this is probably quite a good sort of bracket to put around the conversation, because, you know, some of the stuff we've talked about has been reasonably controversial. And, you know, I think as a coach and a mentor, my role is to tell people not what they want to hear, but maybe what they could or should be doing if they want to get a better outcome. And that might need sugarcoating for some. I understand that. But as an investor, you're investing in shares that are traded on the market. The company's already listed. They don't get anything out of you buying their shares. That's already done when they listed through their IPO. So choosing to get behind it or not doesn't really affect the day-to-day running of the business. It's just purely and simply a play of buying at X and selling at Y that we're really talking about here. And our job, and it's not just our job, it's our fiduciary duty, is detailed thoroughly in the Corporations Act. If you're bored, feel free to have a read of that, is to look after our clients' primary interests and represent them as best we can. And that is finding good quality investment opportunities that are likely to move the needle in the positive way for the client. That's our responsibility. And the examples that we've used here, unethical or questionable or on the nose or just outright disgraceful, that you might consider as a moral lens to look through, they simply don't form part of the Corps Act and that fiduciary duty that you have to look out for your clients. So deciding to invest in a defense company isn't propagating war. It's not giving the company more money to develop weapons. That is not what you're doing. You're just simply trading the share price in the secondary market.
Very nice.
That's so there is a detachment there, and you can use that firebreak, if you will, that might help traverse the morality conversation, which, as you've mentioned, Ozempic is a challenging one for you. Tobacco will be a challenging one for me on the basis my mother died of lung cancer, and other people would have views on other stocks within there for similar reasons that are close to their personal belief system. But ultimately, our job is to serve up opportunities to help people make money. And I think the five we've talked about, all the sectors particularly, really give a broad spectrum of that.
Indeed.
Defense industry, it is what it is. It is what it is.
Can't live with it, can't live without it, really.
We live in a free world, arguably because of it. And so that may be the lens that you choose to look through. Casinos and gambling, and particularly given the moral conduct of it, that's maybe a little bit more on the nose, even though you think, well, people don't die from that, whereas the defense industry, they do. You know, there are a lot of different sort of, I guess, angles you can look at this from. But there's five for people to get stuck into. And I reckon Nova and Ozempic, it's not the end of the journey. It's just the start. And if you compare that to, say, you know, AI and NVIDIA, you know, 18 months ago, oh, NVIDIA's done its thing. It's come out of the blocks and it's done. It's still been going. Okay, it's come off a little bit more recently, but it's been on a heck of a charge. And maybe that's where Nova's at.
Indeed. Well, thank you very much for your insight today, AB. That was a really fun one.
Yeah, a bit controversial.
I love it.
I hope we don't get too much hate posts for it, but
that's
if we
okay.
do, well, I guess we do, and that's people's choice.
And can I ask something of our listeners here too before we wrap up? Any other controversial stocks that you know of that you might want to, that you want to list, post it in the chat. We'd love to hear.
Absolutely. Done deal.
Cheers.
There you have it, guys. Make sure you give us a review and a rating, and we'll look forward to hosting you next week.